Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk Saturday Night Symposium. I am Laura Reeves, your host and moderator this evening. Our panelists, Leslie Hiltz, Karen Erickson, Sid Marks, all three judges, all three breeders. Karen has a veterinary practice that she's involved with, so we've got a lot of information here that we can apply to how do we preserve our breeds, how do we preserve our sport. All of the things that we want to talk about, and I'm going to let each of our panelists introduce themselves, and we will go from there, okay?
My name is Leslie Hiltz. I originally started showing dogs when I lived in Australia in the late 60s, so I've been showing for quite a while. Had beagles in Australia. I had a hound and toy license in Australia before moving to the U.S.
When did you come here?
88, yeah. And, of course, once you become a U.S. resident, because my husband's American and I married him, once you become a U.S. resident, you lose all your knowledge. And so you have to go back and start from scratch. So that's what I did. And so now I have 4.5 groups. I still have beagles. My youngest litter is 4 months old. I still breed and show. Okay.
I'm Karen Erickson, and I attended my first dog show when I was 8 years old. And I hate to tell you, but that was like
20 years ago.
No, it was more like 60 years ago. But my mom and dad dropped me off. I grew up in New York, and those were the days of all shows were benched. They dropped me off at the, I saw the thing in the paper that said dog shows 8 till 5. They dropped me off at 8. Was enough money to get a hot dog and soda for lunch. And nowadays, you wouldn't think of doing that, but it was safe then. And I was fascinated the whole day long, and I thought, this is for me. And then I showed my first dog when I was, I think, 16. So, you know, we're looking at 50, 60 years of experience here. And I bred English Cockers, and I'm happy that my mentee is here carrying on what I started. And Bernese Mountain Dogs, and a number of terriers over the years. Currently, my husband's a veterinarian. I manage the veterinary practice, and I talk to a lot of people about breeds and misconceptions they might have about purebred dogs, mixed breed dogs, adopt, don't shop, you know, the whole situation that we're in now. So anyway, I'll talk about that more later. Here's Steve.
I started in 1963, young man. There was a 1963.
Damn, me beat by 2 years.
And there's a Santa, too.
I then became a handler. I worked as an assistant handler first in a pointer Labrador kennel. Showed mostly sporting dogs. I have bred Irish Setters, Welsh Springers, Beagles, English Springers. I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch. But
Flatcoats.
And I have Flatcoats, yeah, thank you. And like many others, I have judged internationally. I've been in 6 different countries and started judging in 1974.
Okay, so we're going to start with this basic concept and let's see where we go from there. If you guys have questions, if you have input, ideas, anything like that, shout out. We'll have an opportunity for you guys to participate as well. Okay, so to start with, panelists. Preservation breeding, preserving our breeds, the history. Purebred dogs are history and they are art and they are our conduit to our past and to our future. So preserving our breeds to preserve their place in history. What are some of the things that we, each one of us as breeders, as judges, as exhibitors, just owners, what can we do?
Thank you for being the first person to have to say something.
You can hand it down and start with Sid.
I don't know what the problem is, but I find it interesting that when you judge in Europe, that the average age of dog exhibitors in Europe is probably mid-30s, and you see lots of families and the whole family is there. You know, you'll have grandparents, parents, children, and there seems to be a much greater involvement, and it becomes a family sport. And I think some of that may be the fact that there's probably only one show a month, and the other three weekends they can take the kids to soccer or some other activity. Perhaps we have too many shows, and if we diminish the number of shows, we might get better attendance at the other shows. That is somewhat a geographical problem in the U.S. If you're on the East Coast, you can go in four or five different directions on any one day and hit a show. It's not quite such a problem.
In a couple hours.
Yeah. It's not quite such a problem on the West Coast or in Colorado or somewhere like that where you've got long drives. But perhaps that's something we need to look at to try and get more young people involved in the sport. And it's not because of the entry fees or anything like that, because the average entry fee in Europe is probably $100. But they only do it probably once a month. So that's the difference I see. Do I have a solution? No.
Oh, come on, Karen.
He's dying to answer. I know.
Well, open mouth, insert foot. One of the problems we have, I have asked exhibitors from time to time about their standard. I hate to tell you how many exhibitors don't know their standard. Some haven't even read it. And now what we have going on is we are captive by what is winning, and you are breeding to whoever is winning rather than breeding properly. This young lady next to me recently posted a picture on Facebook of an old Labrador that I remembered. You would not recognize him today. He was a gorgeous, gorgeous Labrador. And someone had the gall to post on Facebook, because we were talking about how much leg he had and how different he looked from today, that he was out of coat and that's why he looked like he had leg. So I don't know how you help that type of person, but just like I tell new judges, the problem with newer judges is they have never seen a great one. Mm. If you haven't seen a great one, you don't have that picture in your mind. Unfortunately, we want to get as many new young exhibitors as we can, but that requires them to make some effort to find the proper mentors and go and learn their breed and learn their breed history and look up some of these great old dogs and see the difference in what's being shown today.
Thank you. I'm going to take a slightly different bent and get away from the dog show atmosphere of it, except to say that when I was young and when my kids were growing up, we had match shows. You could go and picnic and have a fun day with people, and there was a lot more fun to the sport than I see today. You know, now it's really serious.
We're having fun tonight. Come on.
We are. But people come, show their dogs, and leave, right? Most people, as opposed to really making, when there were bench shows, for instance, you know, you would talk to the people next to you and have a lot more time to discuss breeding, et cetera, et cetera. But I think one of the things we need to do is we need to get our dogs out amongst the public. The clubs need to do things besides just put on shows to introduce, again, our dogs to the public. We have to stop feeling guilty about having purebred dogs and breeding our dogs. We need to breed our dogs. We need to get them out there. We need to have our dogs in the public in Reading with Rover programs where parents see how good our dogs are with children and how dependable and safe their children are with dogs that are purposely bred. And granted, sporting dogs anymore, I still hunt. I know people who hunt, but they are so good as therapy dogs, as reading program dogs, as battle buddy dogs, as, you know, up and down the wazoo, and use those Facebook pages to post things about purebred dogs. If nothing else, you know, hook into the AKC Facebook page and you will get all kinds of things coming through. I'm putting daily multiple posts on our veterinary clinic Facebook page to introduce people to purebred dogs and what they do. And most people don't know that anymore. We've been shamed and guilted out of our purebred dogs. Breed your dogs. For heaven's sakes, you know, breeders today, to get a dog from a breeder, sometimes you might as well be applying to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and if you fall short of that, you're not getting one of my dogs, right? Well, no, we have to interview people, get to know them, develop a relationship, and trust them with your best, not your worst. Trust them with your best and say, I am trusting you with a piece of my heart, with a piece of my legacy. I will mentor you. I will help you. But you got to get this dog out there. And so I think there are things that all of us can do. Bring your purebred dogs before the public and explain what they do, how they do it. And I have to say, I have four children who I think each one of them have gone to a rescue and gotten rescue dogs one point or another. And I at home have a rescue and two purebreds. So see, when people at the clinic can say, you have purebred dogs. And I say, well, I have purebred dogs and I have a rescue dog. And guess which one? It's taken me 3 years to be a decent house dog.
Right.
Or I can answer the question that I get all the time. Well, mixed breeds are more healthy than purebred. And I can say, well, that's funny because just in this last week, I've seen a mixed breed dog with wobblers. I've seen a mixed breed dog with a liver shunt. But the purebred dogs, at least before they're bred, if you get one from a good breeder, it's going to be health tested and you're going to know what to look for. And you're getting a guarantee usually that that dog is the best it can be of that breed. So, you know, there are answers to these questions, and we can't just kowtow to the adopt, don't shop line. We have to come up with our own. Mm-hmm. And why purebred dogs are so dependable in terms of predictability of their personalities and what fits into your life.
Very good.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, I just can't hide it.
Yeah, I know, I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop! Yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight-line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included. Because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow.
Okay, this is really good. And Leslie, I wanted to touch on, you were talking about Europe and the fewer dog shows. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, take that experience you have from Australia and from Europe and apply it in addition to fewer dog shows, because dogs that I see and here discussed in other countries are more in public, just what Karen's talking about. So I'd like to know kind of your insight on how are people doing that? What can we do? This is a proactive thing. What can we do to help people be more proactive with their dogs to get them more in touch with the community?
Well, that certainly doesn't apply in Australia. Australia, you can't take dogs into hotels or restaurants or anything. So
okay,
we'll wipe that out of the discussion.
Forget Australia. Sorry, man.
But yes, Europe, it's not uncommon to see people take dogs to restaurants.
Right.
They'll curl up under the chair and go to sleep,
like
just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
But because they do it from the time they're puppies and it's expected that they behave, they do, and they train them for it. Some countries have restrictions that if they're on public transport, they have to wear a muzzle, irrespective of breed. But, you know, they'll take them on trains and buses and everything else. So they do get the dogs out, and they do a lot of things with them in public. But in many, many countries, they have very strong breed clubs that have huge shows and a lot of social events, with or without the dogs. And so their common interest, obviously, is the breed, but they do also socialize with other people and bring friends and relatives along because, hey, it's going to be a really good party. Why don't we go? And so, you know, they do have those other aspects.
Okay.
Let me add something.
Sid's got something too.
Having judged in Australia a few times, I will tell you it is considerably less stressful. It is a lot more fun, and probably a lot more wine is drunk.
I'm saying if you just started the day at noon, dog shows would be so much better.
And that's the truth. They party at their shows. It is an event. For example, the show in Melbourne, they stop at noon when the horse race goes off. And people are betting on the races. And then they get back on their show. And then they have something called Fashion on the Square. Have you seen that? Where people dress up in costumes that befit their dog. For example, if you had a Saluki, you would dress up in an Arabian costume or this kind of thing. And they waltz around and you have a judge go out there, and I was the judge, and pick the best costume that fit the best dog. It was fun for me because I had a bottle of champagne in my hand.
Was it Dom Perignon?
And lobster.
Oh, and the head of the Australian Kennel Club came up and said, "You weren't drinking in that ring, were you?" I said, "Pity the thought."
Okay. So I think, you know, we talk about getting mentors. We talk about having more fun. So this is another one of the things that I hope that these panel discussions offer, even if it isn't to every single person at the dog show because they went out to dinner. At least we have the opportunity to visit with each other. We have the opportunity to interact with some judges. And I think that this is so important. And the more that we can do this, I made a list back when I was writing for Best in Show Daily. I made a 12-step program for a New Year's resolution. Yeah, and I really feel very strongly about that. One of the things on that was have a party, have a water balloon fight, have a potluck, invite people you don't know. You know, go watch a breed that isn't yours. I think that one of the points that was made earlier, people come, they show their dog, and if they haven't won before Best of Breed is in the ring, they're gone. That leaves you no opportunity to learn. It leaves you no opportunity to see what you might have done differently. And I think it's very important that when we have these discussions, we don't necessarily talk so much about what's wrong, but more about what we can change. And so when I look at dog shows today, and you guys answer me if I'm wrong, I'm going to give each of you a chance to speak on this topic. But I started in dog shows in the American Kennel Club in the early 80s. So I'm a baby, right?
Right.
The vast majority of people involved in dog shows when I first started were breeders. They were not people who just owned a dog. Everybody at the dog show was a dog breeder. So I think we can speak to that. And I think one of the things that we can do to preserve our breeds, to preserve our sport, to grow forward, is look at today's dog show exhibitors who have a dog and say, okay, what can we do to encourage them to continue and become a dog breeder?
Well, slightly off topic, but I do think one thing you could do is encourage altered dogs, spayed or neutered, because somebody might have bought a pet from you and they spayed or neutered it because the veterinary advice was to get it done at 6 months and a day.
Not in our clinic.
And actually it turned out to be a fairly nice puppy and it could have been shown, but once it's spayed or neutered, you don't have the opportunity. So if you could have altered classes.
Aska. Think about how successful that is in Aska.
Right. And then perhaps their next dog, they won't spay or neuter because they've got interested in showing. And it doesn't have to be showing. It can be performance events as well. And that's where the growth is at the moment, is in performance events. And your spayed and neutered can participate in that, as can your show dogs.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that there are more things that people can do with their dogs than confirmation. That there's all the performance events, both at shows and hunt
and
tests.
And more of them every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Scent work. There's all kinds of things that people can do with dogs. But I think it's important to encourage anyone who shows a spark to come to the show. I had somebody come today who works for the accounting firm that we use. And she said, oh, you have a veterinary clinic. I'm interested in dogs, you know, and I'd like to go to a dog show. And I invited her and she came. Or sitting at the catalog table, a mother came over with two daughters and said, we're getting a Rhodesian Ridgeback puppy. Can you talk to my daughters about junior showmanship? And you stop what you do and you spend time with them. And it's so important. I mean, you're all here because you love dogs. You love dog shows. It's so important to transmit that excitement of why you love being here and why you love your dogs and why this can be fun and something you can do as a family. When you've been doing it for years, you kind of forget that. And you don't take time for the people who have no clue what this is all about. And I think the more we stop and take a deep breath and say, this sport's not going to survive if we don't have younger people coming up and think about the feeder ways that I always send families with kids that are getting dogs to 4-H, and they can learn there about shows. And even if they have a mixed breed dog when they come into the clinic, I say, oh, you have an 11-year-old? I'll tell you about a great program, and that's the 4-H dog program. So there are ways we can get people started that are maybe not walking right into the confirmation ring, but it's a wonderful learning experience for them.
Let me ask you a question. How many people in here have a dog who has won a group? Okay. When I was a delegate, I brought up a motion that we should bring back some dog shows that stop at the breed level. Mm-hmm. There are people that are convinced. I'm here to tell you it's not true, but there are people that are convinced that they cannot compete with the professional handlers. We have many, many owner handlers who have won best in show, have won groups, etc., etc. But that perception exists. Mm-hmm. If we had some breed level shows, I think the stress level would go down.
Yeah.
I think the rankings are hurting us.
Yeah.
The average mom and pop who want to bring their kids out and show dogs, they're not out there to go fight for a group win or best in show or be the handler who, if he only takes a group two, he failed that day. So I tried to get us to have some breed level shows, and I was told it would never work because you would lose entries. You would lose the professional handlers. They would not be there. But maybe that'd be maybe that would be okay for some shows, because we have shows today that have fewer than 500 entries, fewer than 400 entries. If you have an AKC delegate or talk to your clubs, I think a breed level show once a year would help newer people come out and feel that they can compete on an even level.
Good. I like that one.
Just going back, because in Australia, as you would have noticed, Sid, you have class in group awards.
Yes.
So describe what that means.
Okay, so if you have an Afghan and you have a 6-9 puppy and it wins the class, you then go forward to the 6-9 class in the group.
Oh, okay.
And then if you have a 9-12 and you win that class, you go forward to the 9-12. If you have a bred by, you go forward to the bred by group.
Interesting.
The owner-handler group, opening group.
Australian bred.
Australian bred, yeah. Every class for every breed goes through to the group. And it did mean that you had to stay for the group. I mean, you didn't have to stay, but people did stay for the group. And because you stayed for the group, you tended to talk to other people and other breeds because you were stuck there for the day. And so you knew it was going to be a whole day event before you went. And if you had, say, you'd taken a litter of puppies and you'd put one in puppy and one in open just so that you could show them both, and they both won their class, then they would both go through to that class in group. And that did give a whole lot of other people a chance to win something in the group apart from best in group.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would sort of be a step up from your breed only.
Right.
this is why we have these panels, because they're really cool. And I agree, rankings could just all go away, and I think the dog show world would be better for it.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.